Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Today's broadcast is an antitoxin, a preventative health measure against the poisonous lies that permeate our world and infect us. To a very large extent, these lies are Jewish lies, though the mouth that utters them may belong to a white man or woman hired by the tribe as a media talking head instead of an actual Jew. But the lies of the Jewish establishment, the international Jewish nation within nations, all exhibit certain formulas or patterns, and it is some of these patterns that I will teach you to recognize today, so that these Jewish lies will no longer have any effect on you. In fact, after learning the techniques for identifying these lies, you will find yourself laughing at the absurdity and preposterousness of most of them. And your reason and common sense, which the liars suppress by their insidious techniques, will come to the fore, and you will no longer be able to take seriously the fictions that hypnotize so many Americans now. You will smile with wry amusement as the victims genuflect and open their wallets and tear ducts. And you will smile with joy as you spread the cure among your family members and countrymen. It's true that during wartime or times of active hostility, almost all governments will lie. Sometimes they will lie to their own people in order to keep them fighting. They will lie to the enemy in order to deceive him. They will lie to the enemy in order to better destroy or kill him. But there is one nation, one people, which behaves as though a state of war perpetually exists between itself and all other nations of the earth. There is a nation that regards as its eternal enemies all other peoples of this planet, and whose attitude toward even its nominal allies and greatest benefactors is one of total mistrust, to the extent that it continually deceives them. It is a nation which even has special names for all outsiders, for all, quote-unquote, Gentiles, for all so-called Goyim, for all non-Jews. Does any other people do that? In their own religious writings, Jews boast of their superiority over the Goyim, which they compare to cattle. Cattle, of course, must be herded, and one of the best ways to herd them is to convince them that they really, quote-unquote, want to go in the direction that their owners desire. Force can be used as a last resort, of course, but if one can convince the dumb brutes that the slaughterhouse is really paradise, then they'll gallop over there with much less trouble. Just put a sign over the slaughterhouse door, perhaps, reading, "Heaven." Everyone likes humor, but it is Jewish humor that seems universal in this decadent age. It is Jewish humor that dominates our mass media, since Jews own and run almost all of it. And as we've all experienced, it is often humor with a nasty, perverted, sick edge. But there is another Jewish humor. A Jewish humor not intended for Gentile eyes, which is found in sources intended to be read only by Jews. In these private jokes, recurrent themes are the intellectual superiority of the Jew, the gullibility of white people, and how easily we whites can be fooled by Jewish deception. As such, Jewish humor is very revealing. One such joke runs as follows, quote, "On a train in Tsarist Russia, a Jew is eating a whitefish wrapped in paper. A Gentile sitting across the aisle begins to taunt him with various anti-Semitic epithets. Finally, he asks the Jew, 'What makes you Jews so smart?' 'All right,' replies the Jew, 'I guess I'll have to tell you. It's because we eat the head of the whitefish.' 'Well, if that's the secret,' says the Gentile, 'then I can be as smart as you are.' 'That's right,' says the Jew. 'And in fact, I happen to have an extra whitefish head with me. You can have it for 5 kopecks. The Gentile pays for the fish head and begins to eat. An hour later, the train stops at a station for a few minutes. The Gentile leaves the train and comes back. 'Listen, Jew,' he says, 'you sold me that whitefish head for 5 kopecks, but I just saw a whole whitefish at the market for 3 kopecks. "See," replies the Jew, "you're getting smarter already." Close quote. Not only has the Jew deceived the Russian, he's stolen his money, insulted him, and gotten him to humiliate himself by eating something disgusting in public, all in under a minute. Jewish psychoanalyst Theodor Reich, in his book Jewish Wit, which deals with subliminal psychological meanings of Jewish humor, admits the existence of this Jewish contempt for the easily fooled non-Jew when he notes, quote, "All kinds of deception and cunning, of fraud and trickery, devised and committed by Jews, either to get money or to avoid paying money, are exposed and candidly revealed by Jewish jokes." Close quote. The Jews don't hate us for our gullibility, however. They hate us because we as a race produce so many who are not gullible, who can see through their deceptions. We can increase that number by enlightening others. And Reich and the Jewish joke tellers are wrong if they limit the extent of Jewish lies to tricks that get them money. Far more important than a few kopecks or a few $1 billion are the Jewish lies which garner them sympathy and reverence. Yes, I said reverence, for the key to understanding the most dangerous Jewish lies is this: Jews lie to gain sympathy and reverence. The ideas that they want to plant in our minds are that Jews are terribly persecuted and that Jews are especially holy. To someone whose eyes are open, the constantly repeated mantra that the Jews are a persecuted people, a tiny, powerless minority, deserving of our help and deepest sympathy, is an insanely absurd idea. In reality, the Jews are undoubtedly the richest and most powerful ethnic group on this planet. They are probably the 4th largest nuclear power on Earth via their home base, Israel, and through their extremely influential positions in the media and the financial institutions of the West. They have effective control of our political system and the armed might of the most powerful nations in the world, particularly via their control of the dominant superpower, the United States. In the West, Virtually no news is broadcast. Virtually no feature film is made. Virtually no newspaper article is printed which has not first passed the gauntlet of Jewish approval. Despite this massive power, the Jews paradoxically portray themselves as persecuted, and a large percentage of their efforts is concentrated on maintaining that impression among their subjects. In the last three quarters of a century, the Jews have concentrated on telling lies about how much they were oppressed and how many of them died in the Second World War, and stories of their sufferings at the hands of the Germans in that war are omnipresent in their periodicals and on their television networks. The essayist Joseph Sobrin once opined that the New York Times should change its name to Holocaust Update. Ask a schoolchild or your neighbor how many Americans or Frenchmen or Germans or Russians or Japanese died in the Second World War, and your answer will be a blank stare or a shrug of the shoulders. But ask about how many Jews died, and the magical number 6 million will spring to the lips of most, though possibly not quite as many now as in previous decades. The media bosses have done their job very well. The Jews' catchphrase about what they refer to as the Holocaust is "never forgive, never forget." And of course, it is they who will never forgive Europeans for the unspeakable crime of wanting nations without Jewish supervisors. And it is we who must never forget the lesson that to question the Jews' right to own our television networks and control our financial and political systems is morally equivalent to and literally leads to throwing innocent Jewish grandmothers into gas chambers. Do you see how the idea that the richest and most powerful clan on earth is somehow poor and oppressed checkmates any opposition and gives that clan even more power? But one weakness that the Jews have is that very contempt for our intelligence, their exaggerated faith that enough of us are gullible to keep the rest in line. This weakness leads the Jews to be careless in their lies at times, and that carelessness opens the door to doubt and to reason. This Jewish carelessness causes them to lie in hilariously absurd and contradictory ways. Let's look at one such lie, one of their Holocaust lies, which they told during the Second World War. As you will see, they can't keep their story straight. In Zurich, in 1944, a Jew named Stefan Zenda published a book entitled Der letzte Jude aus Polen, literally, The Last Jew from Poland, which was translated into English under the title The Promise Hitler Kept, published by Roy Publishers in New York. I quote Zenda's claims regarding Jewish deaths at the Belzec concentration camp. Quote, "The trains coming into Belzec loaded with Jews were driven into a tunnel in the underground premises of the execution building. Everything was taken away from them. The goods seized in this way were carefully sorted out, listed and ticketed, and subsequently used for the benefit of the master race. It was to spare the staff at Belzec this tremendous task, which of course hindered them in their real job, that later on all Jews were sent to Belzec naked. When trainloads of naked Jews arrived, they were herded into a great hall capable of holding several thousand people. This hall had no windows, and its floor was of metal. Once the Jews were all inside, the floor of this hall sank like a lift into a great tank of water which lay below it, until the Jews were up to their waists in water. Then a powerful electrical current was sent into the metal flooring, and within a few seconds all the Jews, thousands at a time, were dead. The metal flooring then rose again, and the water drained away. The corpses of the slaughtered Jews were now heaped all over the floor. A different current was then switched on, and the metal flooring rapidly became red hot, so that the corpses were incinerated, as in a crematorium, and only ash was left. The floor was then tipped up, and the ashes slid out into prepared receptacles. The smoke of the process was carried away by great factory chimneys. That was the whole procedure. As soon as it was completed, it could start up again. New batches of Jews were constantly being driven into the tunnels. The individual trains brought between 3,000 and 5,000 Jews at a time, and there were days on which the Belzec line saw between 20 and 30 such trains arrive. Close quote. Now, electrical engineers will be amazed at a powerful electrical current that does not obey the normal laws of physics. But then, since Jews don't lie, we must believe that the evil Germans did develop it and use their amazing discovery, only at Belzec, in a gigantic facility which was never found or seen by anyone. Funeral directors will be intrigued by the other magical electrical current created by the Germans, which can incinerate not just one body, a process which can take over 2 hours, even in the most modern crematoria, but thousands of bodies in a few moments. And students of demography must also note with amazement the numbers cited by the honorable and inerrant Jews. If there were 4,000 Jews per train, and only 15 trains per day arriving at Belzec during the years claimed, 1942 to 1945, then that is 60,000 Jews per day, or 21,900,000 Jews per year. A total of 65,700,000 Jews killed. That means that at the Belzec concentration camp alone, 4 times the number of Jews were killed than existed in the entire earth at the time. Even if you assume that only a third as many trains arrived as claimed, and that the Germans took holidays off, that still leaves you with the fact that the Germans at Belzec killed more Jews than existed in the world, leaving, apparently, Auschwitz, Wall Street, and Hollywood entirely empty. The stories continue today. In a local newspaper here in western Pennsylvania, a wealthy Jew named Lester Edelstein was quoted recently. Even though he died in 1990, his blatherings still make the news for some reason, regarding his claims about German camps during the war. Edelstein apparently felt completely free to make up and or spread totally ridiculous stories, confident that no one would dare to question them. Here's what he said, taken directly from an article published in Johnstown's Our Town and the Altoona Daily American. Quote, Edelstein toured the camp. He discovered prisoners were stripped naked and suspended upside down from a concrete pit. Hungry police dogs and Dobermans proceeded to come in and jump up and bite the genitals of the prisoners. At one end of the camp was a stone quarry, a steep wall, and a small lake. Prisoners were forced to carry a heavy rock up the steep slope. If they made it, they had to repeat the task the next day, and so on, until they fell to their death in the lake. There were hundreds of skeletons and bodies in the lake. He went into the sitting room in the infirmary. The victims were seated in chairs. Lights were turned on, and they were told to look at the camera. As it clicked, they were shot in the back of the head, Edelstein said on a taped recording before his death. Close quote. After reading Zenda and Edelstein, with a mind not clogged with superstitions about the Jews' veracity and holiness, the Jews' claims of special persecution begin to ring a little hollow. By the way, may I remind you that in some nations of the West, it is actually illegal to doubt Jewish lies like these, and one can be fined and imprisoned for doing so. That brings to mind the maxim that I stated several years ago. If you want to know the identity of the real rulers of your society, merely ask yourself this question: who is it that I am not permitted to criticize? There is historical precedent for these kinds of lies as well. The Jews always have their enemy of the moment. For a time, this enemy was the Germans, and they lied and agitated many nations to hate and attack Germany, and they were successful. At one time, it was another white people, the Romans, who were the focus of Jewish hatred, which resulted in the most absurd Holocaust propaganda ever created, as I detailed in my article, Holocaust Tales, A Prototype. In that story, they claimed that Romans killed 800 million Jews in a single small town. More recently, they have resorted to similar lies to induce Americans to attack Libya, Iraq, Serbia, Afghanistan, Syria. The list goes on and on. Now the war drums are sounding again, and the Jewish lies are proliferating as they attempt to get us to hate and attack Iran, or even Russia. And many cynical American politicians follow their lead, and along with Fox News and CNN, agitate the ignorant yahoos who think they are being patriotic by killing anyone that the Jews tell them to kill. And don't kid yourself. They have already started demonizing sexually healthy and racially conscious white Americans and ginning up the weaponized perverts and non-whites and leftist whites to hate us and eventually to kill us. This pattern repeats again and again throughout history. Now that we know how to recognize that pattern, we are one step closer to preventing the next repetition.